Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Well, Bill Aaron is a photographer, published a couple books, and his latest one, New Beginnings, The Triumphs of 120 Cancer Survivors, is a book about giving hope to people, I guess. Is it, Bill? Be a good way to put it?
Yes, it is. Let me emphasize that the process of doing the book was to first interview each person for about 2 to 3 hours, and then which for many people turned, and for myself as well, turned into quite a cathartic experience, interviewing them, taking everything from their diagnosis forward, and then decide with them what kind of photograph would best convey how they felt about their experience, their journey, if you will. I'm also a sociologist, and so I had training in what we call participant observation. And it's kind of like a participant observation study of each person singly, it collapsed into a short period of time. So the book is really a summary of the interviews plus the photographs that we did together.
Bill,
A summary of the interviews, meaning what they learned.
Yeah.
For instance, there was a rabbi in Los Angeles who learned about angels, who are people in everyday life who come to us in our most trying times, and they help us out. And he said that cancer has taught me that the goal of life is to become someone else's angel. A woman named Tiffany discovered a new self. She said, if all I had to do was lose my hair and a piece of my arm, it was worth it. Kay Warren, the wife of Rick Warren, the Southern California evangelist, she felt her mortality. She said, I can't control how long I live, but I can control how I live. I mean, she adds, how long I live, meaning that's up to God. A woman named Ann from Florida changed her lifestyle. She was very funny. She said, no one dies from exercising, eating fruits and vegetables, or juicing. So, everybody took this lesson to heart in their own particular way.
What was the most touching story for you?
I think it was actually Tiffany's. Let me just find that page and read you a paragraph. One day in chemo, I fainted. They told me it might be a tumor in my brain. I freaked out. A beautiful Asian girl came over and sat next to me. It was intimidating because I was bald and bloated with no makeup, feeling like crap, and she was so beautiful. She put her arms around me and comforted me. That day I knew I'd met an angel. From then on, through every treatment, we were always by each other's side. One morning I found out she had died. I cried, and I wondered why God didn't take me because she was so good. He put her in my life to save my life and then took hers. I realized that now I have to do twice as much because I am now living for the two of us. It's only one of the just very remarkable people. Another family who son was 3 years old when he was diagnosed. They had never been religious, never been inside a church. And one day the son said that when he was in the hospital, he said that he had been talking with God, which made the mother terribly afraid because she meant that that was a prelude to death. But after talking to him about it, she realized that it wasn't, that this was a source of comfort for him. And he asked at 3 years old, and he asked to be taken someplace where he could pray to God. And she sat in the back and heard him say, she took him to the hospital chapel, and heard him say something to the effect that, God, please take this cancer away so my mommy can be happy again. So they're just filled with these things, these different stories, these different touches. one of my favorites was this little girl who the mother was crying the day they had to shave her head, and she said, her name was Manet. She said, "Don't cry, Mommy. I may be ugly on the outside, but inside Manet is beautiful." And then she started dancing around the room and singing, "Don't you wish your girlfriend was bald like me?" So, I mean, you know, people said the most deeply felt and the most profound and touching statements to me that I hopefully have accurately and lovingly recorded.
Bill, you mentioned that, you know, you're doing these interviews with people over a couple hours. Mm-hmm. I imagine that and you said that they're really cathartic for these people. I imagine that in some cases, you're probably the first person to come along and ask them that whole story.
In some cases, yes. In some, no. There are, you know, cancer survivorship is, it's only beginning to be recognized as a field in its own right. So I think I'm the first person to want to do a book like this, mm-hmm. that puts together life lessons, if you will, that puts together the third and fourth stages of those four that I put together, and really systematizes it to the effect that, you know, when I first, I'm skipping around a little bit, but when I first designed the book, I thought I would do 100 people because that is obviously more powerful than one or two or three or four, even five people. When I finished 100, my publisher said, "Well, you know, let's do it." And I said, "Well, there's some other people." So they said, "Okay, take a couple months." So about 5 months later, my editor called up and said, "Okay, by my count, you've got 120 people. I think it's time we did something." So, and I still have a folder full of people. People were, after when word began to spread that I was doing this project, and people began contacting me because they thought, they really wanted to get their story out there because they thought it could help others who were newly diagnosed and just beginning to go through what they went through. I mean, 95% of the people I asked were delighted to participate.
Mm. What does your book do for people that have cancer? It's been out for, you know, not very long, but yeah. You know, I'm sure that you've had, you know, you've given it out or people have commented, you know, that have picked it up. What is it, what kind of response have you had in that area?
I'd say every day I get an email from someone that says they just saw the book and they appreciate it because it gave them a sense of comfort and a sense of hope. There are lots of different cancers in the book. There's an index at the back of all the different cancers and which pages the person who had them are on. But I think it does become a source of comfort and a source of hope because, well, for me, it's the kind of book I wish had existed when I was diagnosed. If I had seen something like that, I think I would have been greatly comforted. I think I would have, you know, not freaked out quite so much and not yelled at my wife quite so much. It also talks about the caregivers, the wives and husbands and boyfriends and girlfriends. So I believe it's for anyone who's newly diagnosed, who's in treatment, who's post-treatment, especially those trying to figure out and make some sense of what the rest of their life is going to be like.
Would you say that, you know, the people that have gone through treatment that are in that silent stage, mm-hmm. this would make a significant difference for them?
I think it made a huge difference for them. I think it legitimizes the struggle. Still in many parts of the country, if not the world, people expect treatment to end with some sort of conclusion. But for the survivor, it's not really a conclusion. And I think one person kept saying that they would see their oncologist, and the oncologist would say, well, you're just feeling a little depressed. You'll get over it, and you'll get back to normal. But the patient doesn't get over it, and they don't get back to their old normal. And I think it legitimizes that for them. And once it becomes a legitimate thing, then you can begin to deal with it more effectively.
If there was one thing that caretakers of people with cancer were to understand, whether it be the oncologist or their medical mm-hmm. doctor, what do you think it would be?
That just being there, being a friend, is the best they can do. Learning what to say, and that's learning that this struggle is going on within the person, and that they can support the struggle. They can't do it. Not, you know, even if the oncologist says you're cured, the person's going to be worried about their next test. Not to say, what are you worried for? The doctor said that you're going to be cured or that you are cured. And so I think that if they realize what's happening, one of the things that I don't understand psychologically is everyone, when they're diagnosed, feels all alone. And you can be, I remember I felt so terribly alone, and I'd be sitting in a room with my family, my wife and my kids. We have a community in our synagogue, and I'd be sitting there, and I'd feel so separate and alienated from everyone else. And it's not that I thought no one else has a problem or no one else has gone through cancer, but it's almost like the diagnosis puts a wall around you. And I think just being there to show people that there's no wall, that there doesn't have to be a wall, and that they're there to hold your hand.
Bill, we've run out of time, but thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Dave.
Fantastic having you, and it's been really informative, and I hopefully the people across the country will have learned a lot as well. The book is called New Beginnings, The Triumphs of 120 Cancer Survivors by Bill Aaron, and that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening.